you know, locals understand plunder, loot, murder.
Yeah.
But then, you know, when you're suddenly...
Is that the imperial version of love, snog...
Shagmari
avoid. Shagmari avoid.
Or eat, love, pray. Yeah. Yeah.
Julia Roberts, yeah. About to invade India.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Worst Foot Forward, the podcast where each week we celebrate the best of the worst. My name's Ben Vanderveld, and this week you find us not in our usual recording location of Barry's flat, but our newly established Worst Foot Commonwealth office, where we'll be carrying out our 100% totally paternalistic and caring administration of Serial, The Guilty Feminist, The Joe Rogan Show, The Football Ramble, and most of the podcasts in the top 100, which we have just taken over the running of, all entirely for their own welfare. We will, in due course, be changing the logos of those shows to our own beloved foot with a bullet hole through it, the credits of them to include solely mine and Barry's names, and their revenue streams naturally will be redirected to our own Swiss bank accounts, just so we can spend it better to assist those shows. Last of all, any awards, souvenirs and family heirlooms belonging to the hosts of those shows will now be kept in the newly founded Worst Foot Museum, with a little placard underneath talking about precisely how we stole them. And with me is the Elgin Marble to my increasingly strained excuse for keeping him here, Barry McStay.
Does that make us co-emperors? Because that's never been a good idea in history.
No, have there ever been co-emperors?
Yeah, didn't the Roman Empire split itself into four at one point? And then two and then four? Yeah, and that's how Byzantium happened, or Constantinople. They had Eastern Emperor and Western Emperor.
Of course.
So which bit do you want? Bagsy cereal.
Oh, cool. Oh, okay. I was going to go Bagsy the Eastern Roman Empire.
No, because I imagine the lady who hosts cereal is really good at covert ops, and we will eventually assassinate you and just take it all over anyway.
There's a really famous Cold War satirical cartoon of Khrushchev and JFK both sitting on top of a bomb, arm wrestling each other and with their fingers about to press the button. And that's the kind of co-emperors I imagine you and me are going to be.
I think if both of us had an arm wrestle, it would be an interminable draw, just forever. We are not fighting people.
Maybe that's what we need. We're emperors who are lovers, not fighters. That emperor would not last 5 minutes, would it?
No, we've learned anything in history. Our guest this week is an Indian stand-up comedian, screenwriter, playwright and novelist. You may well know him as a regular contributor to the satirical podcast The Bugle, but he is oh so much more than that. As a stand-up, he's performed at The Comedy Store when it opened in Mumbai in 2010, and he appeared on the legendary BBC Radio 4 panel game Just a Minute when it recorded two episodes there in 2012. He has toured India with his one-man show, recorded a stand-up special for Amazon Prime, and has written, directed and starred in the Amazon Prime series Going Viral. He was written several plays, three of which have been published as novels, and one of which, The President Is Coming, became a Bollywood film in 2009. He brought his show The Empire to the Soho Theatre in London earlier this year because the British might eventually depart, but there is no way us children of empire are ever going to leave them well alone. We'll keep coming to visit, bringing our shows, taking your jobs, expecting you to do our laundry, cook our dinner and give us more pocket money. In fact, it's this awkward legacy that is going to see my co-host very much play up his Dutch surname for the next hour or so.
Oh, mate, the Dutch Empire was awful as well.
Yeah, but at least it left me well enough alone.
That's true. I'm delighted we've not got an Indonesian guest on as well.
Anyway, our guest has been described as spectacular by CNN and a mad genius by the Times of India. And, well, if there's one thing we love in this show, it's spectacular mad geniuses. So it's a delight to welcome Anubhav Pal.
Well, it's lovely to be here. I still have that image of two of you arm wrestling into infinity and the audience going, just press the nuclear button. just let something happen.
Yeah. That is what the Corbyn versus May Brexit debate is going to be like, isn't it?
Yeah. To nobody watching. Thank you very much for coming in person. We have you on your brief couple of weeks here in Britain.
Thank you, Barry. Thank you, Ben, for having me. I was just thinking, I've been coming to your country for the last couple of years and... It's funny you brought up Brexit because, you know, the same debate has lingered on And I don't know what a customs union is, but I've started saying customs union in conversations when I don't know what it means. And every time I come, younger and younger people on your television talking about the customs union, trade, fisheries agreement, trade.
Yeah.
I mean, the American problems are easier to understand. Is a madman, do you keep him, does he go? You know,
it's, yeah. Yes.
Here it's intricacies of trade deals over squid.
herring.
Herring. So yeah. It's not just, because no one's actually physically leave. I suppose, you know, people, visas, etc., that'll happen. But yeah. The real thing is very complicated, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And over 2 years, I've just been hearing intricacies of, I feel like I'm qualified to be like a customs guy.
Yeah. I think the thing is, it's like a divorce. But even in a divorce, you can't entirely cut off all previous contact, because you're about, even if you delete them on Facebook, other friends of them are going to be referencing them on your Facebook page. You're going to run into each other at social events. You cannot have a complete separation in any way.
We have, I think we have as well, we've finally begun to turn into the sort of nation that certain Americans think we are. And that I think that a lot of Americans think that, yeah, you go to a local British hostelry and people are there just debating the minutiae of policy.
Yes.
And that's not been happening.
In wigs and gowns.
Yeah, exactly.
I also, like, previous guest of the show, Mike Stookbury, was tweeting something about Brexit recently, and an American weighed in and said how dangerous it is to be part of a union. History down through the ages, he says, has proven that unions are always terrible.
Because Americans, I think union, think Lenin.
Yes, yeah, like, yeah.
They have a direct association of any. But your
that's the problem with the abbreviation USA. They forget what the U-bit stands for. We always ask our guests what they're worst at. Oh, Sean, about what would you say that is for you?
I was in America doing shows recently, and I realized, it took me forever to realize what I'm shit at. And I'm shit at saying something is good or I'm good at something.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm essentially blaming 150 years of Victorian British education.
I knew that was coming.
Because essentially, if you go to any Indian schooling system, you're basically in Britain in 1910.
Okay.
You know, where it starts, I'm really bad at everything. I'm really sort of... So the idea of irony, you know, that doesn't come through. But now where the whole world is American...
Yeah.
New India is not like that. New India is like, if you're shit, you're shit. If you're good, you're good.
Yeah.
So when you say, you know, say something about yourself, Anubhav, you have to be like, oh, I've done, like you said, all the things where I was just dying.
Yeah.
I was just like, just go back to Gaius Caesar.
Would you like me to just, I'll do a quick take of this. But all of that was shit. And I'll add that to the end of your
please,
intro. Yeah, yeah.
Please. That will make my day.
Yeah.
Because we just grow up with this mix of sort of embarrassment and uncertainty, you know, and that keeps us going. But part of it is supposed to be funny. And I don't realize that now I live in a world and I work in a retail entertainment profession where everyone's sort of, with Facebook and Twitter, everyone's sort of talking themselves up and talking about, I have this follow, I did this, I did that, I'm doing things. And so even in India now, when I finish a thing and like there are 1,000 people and it goes well and I come off and I'm like, that was all right. Someone would be like, that was all right. So it was not good.
Yeah.
So
all right is terrible.
It's awful, yeah.
Fine is excellent.
And that's what I said. I said it was fine. And people were clapping, they were laughing. They were like, just fine. So they want you to say, I was great.
Yeah, yeah. Spectacular, a madcap genius.
I'm just shocked at any part of the world where if you go out and say, I'm very good at this, and people don't burst out laughing. Something wrong with the culture.
That's how we get the American president.
Yeah, he says, I've got the best words.
Yeah, very stable genius.
I'm a very stable genius. Now, we live in a world where you don't burst out laughing at that.
Yeah.
You know? So.
Well, I'll just apologise in advance to listeners for our 99th and probably worst ever episode coming up. Thanks, Anubhav.
That would feel very appropriate that we have a cricket-loving Indian on the show.
Yeah.
And on a worst ever thing, we get to 99 and then we end up back in the pavilion.
That's fine.
We knock our own bales off.
We've already talked about the worst monarchs and the worst emperors, but we haven't talked about the worst empire. And that's what we're going to chat about this week. And Barry, you're going to go first.
Great. Well, I know we're probably going to chat more about it, about the British Empire, but I did find a list of the countries that Britain hasn't invaded.
Great.
From a book by a chap called Stuart Laycock from about 5 years ago. Have a guess at how many countries in the world haven't been invaded by Britain.
It's either 22 or 27.
It's 22. Bang on the number.
It's probably not very many, right?
It's Andorra, Belarus, Bolivia, Burundi, the Central African Republic, Chad, Republic of Congo, Guatemala, Ivory Coast, Kyrgyzstan, Liechtenstein, Luxembourg, Mali, Marshall Islands, Monaco, Mongolia, Paraguay, Sao Tome and Principe, Sweden, Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, and the Vatican City.
That's very good. Yeah. And also half of those...
That's a pretty easy World Cup qualifying group as well.
Imagine if the Empire was still here, the World Cup would just be British and non-British.
It'd be like the World Series. It'd be a final
every year. Some curious countries not on that list. You know, when did Britain invade Iceland? They did it in 1940 during World War II when Iceland refused to be an ally.
Right. Oh, yeah. Wow.
746 Royal Marines showed up in Iceland and went, we're in charge for the next 5 years, just so you know.
That's all it took, 746 people?
Yep, they just showed up.
And, see, this is why history is tricky, you know, because someone's going to open up Google and say, what does it take to invade Iceland? And when you realise it's only 746 people, they're like, oh, that's just my extended family.
Oh, yeah. You know the way kids are always like Googling how to make slime? If your kid is Googling how to invade Iceland, you need to worry about them.
Yeah, then your father is Elon Musk.
So it's no wonder Ireland was bloody obsessed with Britain potentially invading us during World War II. After the war, basically, Churchill made a speech slagging off all the people who hadn't really helped. Even though Ireland, essentially, any time a German crash-landed in Ireland, the Irish stuck him in prison. Any time a British crash-landed in Ireland, we shoved him over to the border into the north. And then after the war, Churchill made this speech, and Eamon de Valera made a speech going, it's important to protect the sovereignty of small nations. In brackets, you invaded Iceland, you fuckers, of course.
Yeah. Yeah, it's important to respect their sovereignty unless they're strategically important.
Yeah, there we go. The empires of Haiti. I didn't realise Haiti had an empire, let alone two. Haiti became independent from France, declared its independence in January 1804, and the governor, Jean-Jacques Dessalines, declared himself Emperor Jacques the First.
Was this after the slave rebellion in Haiti? Was Jacques the First a black guy or a white guy?
He was black.
Yeah, it was after the slave rebellion.
Very good. And he introduced an elective monarchy where he'd appoint his own successor and banned white people from owning property. Isn't it nice to see racism work the other way for once? Emperor Jacques the First was assassinated in 1806. It was a very short-lived empire, only a couple of years. 45 years later, in 1849, a second empire was declared. The president, Faustin Soulouque, he declared himself Emperor Faustin the First, and he was yet again inspired by Napoleon. Loved a bit of Napoleon and thought, yeah, this is what the country needs, a strong arm guy. By that point, the Dominican Republic has seceded from Haiti, so the people who haven't seen the map of the country, Haiti's sort of the left-hand third of it, and the Dominican Republic is the right-hand two-thirds. Basically, President Faustin campaigned and staked his entire reputation on getting back the Dominican Republic. So as soon as he declared himself emperor in 1849, he invaded. And he invaded again in 1850, and in 1855, and in 1856, and got no joy. So promptly, revolution started in 1858, and he was forced to abdicate in 1859. If you've tried to invade a country four times in the space of 7 years with no success, I think it's time to go, isn't it? I think that's the point at which the board votes confidence in you.
Yeah.
I read about Andres Novales. He was born about 1800, and he was a captain in the Spanish army that was occupying the Philippines at the time. And he was very unhappy with the treatment of Creole soldiers in the country, and he was exiled for speaking out against it. But he returned secretly to Manila, and on June the 1st, 1823, he started a revolt with sort of 800 Filipino soldiers rallying to his cause. They seized the Governor General's palace and the cathedral in Manila and the city hall, killed the Governor General and the former Governor General, and his soldiers basically proclaimed Andres Novales the Emperor of the Philippines. And surprisingly, some townspeople sort of rallied to their side, and they were like, this is really happening, guys. But they failed to seize Fort Santiago, and that gave the authorities enough time to rally around and get some soldiers to encircle them as they were trying to take the fort. And Andres was found hiding underneath one of the gates of the city, and he was executed by firing squad the next day, so he was emperor for a day. But
still good.
What makes it worst of all, is the reason they couldn't take Fort Santiago is because the commander of the citadel there wouldn't open the gates to them when they were demanding it. The commander was Andres' brother, Mariano. Who was like, family ties be damned, you ain't getting in here. I'm going to talk about the Galactic Empire.
Is it in Star Trek?
That's in Star Wars, Ben. Yeah. You've just angered so many of our listeners.
Jesus, Anyone under 35 is going to shoot us.
Yeah. Say what you like about the Empire, guys, but they made the shuttles run on time. And they replaced a corrupt bureaucracy in the Old Republic. Basically, Palpatine was acclaimed by the Senate, saying, yeah, we need a strong man to sort things out. He got the worst corporate entities like the Trade Federation under his thumb.
I can't believe that you're retelling the story of Phantom Menace.
Listen, guys, he's job creation. There was hundreds of thousands of crew employed on the Death Stars and building them, and the designers and all the miners, everything that went into it, you know.
The canteen.
Some cleaners. There's a lot of floors to clean.
That is fair. Are you suggesting, by the way, that the Death Star was some sort of New Deal?
Yeah. It was a folly. Like, like an 18th century lord. You're like, got all these unemployed Corellians and Wookiees sitting around. May as well give them something to do.
But Mary's a very valid point. I think...
Thank you, Anabam. I think the revisionism starts now. Rehabilitate Palpatine.
I don't know why I suddenly became a judge in 1780.
What is a Star War?
Correct.
But I'm going to focus on Imperial China. The last emperor left the job in 1912 and the Republic of China was declared. But 3 years later, the second president of the Republic of China, Yuan Shikai, he basically started canvassing around quietly going, guys, what do you reckon if we go back to a monarchy? What do you think is that not a good idea? And he found enough support that he thought, yeah, well, I think people might go for this. But there was a ceremony in which basically the government elected him emperor. And very showily he went, no, I couldn't possibly. Please don't make me emperor. And so the next day they held a ceremony again and they elected him again. He said, oh, if you insist, all right, I'll be a new Chinese emperor. So on the 12th of December 1915, he was proclaimed the great emperor of the Chinese Empire, 3 years after the empire had ended. Very promptly went, okay, who needs a title? Who wants a peerage? Anyone want a peerage? Just let's make sure we're all on the same page, guys. I'm the guy with the peerages. You're going to be the guy supporting me. And so he just rallied all these nobles and generals to his cause. And the former imperial family, the Aisin Giro family, they were like, yeah, return to Imperial China is a great idea. Why don't we get the last emperor, Puyi, to marry your daughter? They were like, this is great. And so sort of secretly going, this is our way back in. And slowly but surely people were like, actually, didn't we just get rid of this like 3 years ago? And more warlords were speaking out against it. And he abandoned the plan to restore the monarchy on the 22nd of March. So his reign lasted 83 days. And he died a couple of months later. A year or so later, in July 1917, the Manchu family, Puyi himself, became emperor again because the president, Li Yuanhang, dismissed the prime minister, the premier, Duan Qirui. So Duan wanted China to enter the war. And the president Li said, no, we're not doing it. Sacked him, sacked all his ministers. So Duan said, well, we're going to lead an uprising. The president basically turned to a general, Zhang Zun, and said, can you mediate this situation? And instead of doing that, Zhang went, Puyi, do you want to be emperor again? Marched on Beijing with a small army and just showed up and went, yeah, he's back in charge, guys. At 4 o'clock in the morning on the 1st of July, just sort of went, he's the emperor. 2 days later, President Yi flees to the French embassy, resigning and making his vice president the president. So they're going, whoops, you're in charge, bye. and he also restored Duan to the premiership to try and sort of calm everything. And Duan managed to mass some armies, and there was a ceasefire called on the 12th of July, meaning the empire lasted just 12 days, and Puyi was out of a job again. 14 years later, guys, there's an incident called the Mukden incident. There was a railway line running through Manchuria that was owned by a Japanese company, and a bomb went off near it. some small bit of dynamite, didn't actually damage the railway line at all, but the Japanese went, well, that was clearly Chinese dissidents, we're invading. It was not Chinese dissidents, it was a Japanese lieutenant called Suemori Kawamoto, basically setting a pretext for Japan to invade and take over Manchuria.
Oh, it was the Japanese equivalent of the Reichstag fire.
It was exactly that, it was their excuse. And once they took over Manchuria and they renamed it Manchukuo, who do you think they turned to take over, guys? Puyi, yet again, in what is, at this point, his third emperor job. And so they just went, okay, you're going to be the chief executive, and then 2 years later they made it the great Manchurian Empire and made him emperor, called him Emperor Kang Dae. They built him a special imperial palace, as you do, and appointed a load of ministers for him, all of whom had Japanese vice ministers who were essentially making all of the decisions for them. And after the end of World War II, when Japan was invaded and taken over, they lost Manchuria, and he was out of a job again. He died in the 60s. But just as someone who wouldn't give the hell up about trying to be an emperor of somewhere, I think I'm going to pick the last one, particularly because it was basically a Japanese puppet state. The Great Manchurian Empire under Emperor Kang Dae, or Puyi, as the world's worst empire.
Okay.
So that was a great story. Yeah. And also,
I love that he just keeps popping back up. Yeah. I'll marry your daughter if it can get me to be into the Imperial Palace. No, I'll be the Emperor. Yeah, sure. 4 o'clock in the morning, I don't have plans. I can be there.
This seems to be the first time an emperor has become an emperor by doing nothing.
Yeah.
By just being there.
Yeah. By being the guy who last had the job.
Yeah. He's just around.
Yeah.
He's like, we need someone to marry someone.
Wow. Well, so the accidental emperor. I love it.
The over-eager emperor, I would say.
Oh, yeah. Okay, over-eager.
It's the one who, at the end of an audition, they go, okay, we've seen enough. And he goes, but I've got 3 more songs prepared for you. Can I do my song? And I've got a tap dance. And I could pull a rabbit out of a hat. I'll do anything, anything. Please let me give you a blowjob.
I was thinking, you know, what if there was a dystopian kind of empire in the future of who would be the least competent to do certain things?
Uh-huh.
You know, like if we lived in an empire where the Russians were in charge of transparency,
okay,
where the Indians were in charge of corruption, where the Americans were in charge of subtlety,
the British, you know, were in charge of negotiation.
Yes, the British were in charge of stability.
Tell you what, I would love as an experiment for the whole world to go, okay, Britain, here's your empire back again, and just see how badly run it would be now.
Yeah.
Because given that Downing Street can't run 4 countries in one at the moment, imagine running a quarter of the earth again. Theresa May would explode.
I think one of the charms of the British Empire was its incompetence. You know, it's just, it's nobody, for example, you know, if we were to say India was the worst empire, nobody had ever shown up ever in the world to loot, plunder, and stay. Everyone had shown up to loot. If we go back to Genghis Khan, right? Genghis Khan, yep. Bad man, empire builder. But what did he do? He stormed into lands that didn't belong to him, murdered all the women and children,
yep.
Put the heads of men on stilts, set up a border to say, these are heads of men on stilts. This is done by Genghis Khan, signed. So just to show people he's menacing, and therefore the fear spreads and everyone's terrified. He took everything he could, went back to Mongolia. His palace was in he didn't move addresses.
Yeah.
But he just left his calling cards of hundreds of heads on spikes.
Exactly. It
would make a very different milk tray ad. That one. Yeah.
He put it there and he said, look, I was here. I didn't make a lot of friends, but this is the kind of guy I am. This is me, Genghis Khan, saying goodbye. But you guys, Lord Wellesley, for example, the real builder of the Indian Empire, came and the first thing he did was wanted to build a palace like the house that he had in Hampshire in the middle of the tropics. So, of course, thousands of quote-unquote natives, I can't say that word anymore because I am one.
Yeah.
But back then, that's what they used to call us.
Yeah.
Built that house, died in the process, but he just didn't want to live anywhere that didn't look like his house in Hampshire, right? Now, when you're doing that, people tend to forget you also have an army. They're just taken up by your own insanity.
Yeah, that makes me actually kind of glad that the Americans and the Russians and the Chinese are in charge of the space program and not us. Because if we landed on Mars first, we'd have to build like a Hampshire residency.
Yeah. You know, locals understand plunder, loot, murder.
Yeah.
But then, you know, when you're suddenly...
Is that the imperial version of Love Snog...
Marry Avoid. Shag,
Marry, Avoid.
Or Eat, Love, Pray. Yeah. Yeah. Julia Roberts, about to invade India. It's just, I mean, the reason I've been so obsessed with British imperial history is because they showed up and the first thing they wanted to do is build houses. And then they wanted to set up all the things that existed in Britain, like a class system, titles. You know? So you say a local native Indian prince wants to go to war with you. And he says, you know, I'll kill you. You're going to take my province. I'm going to murder you. And then the British says, okay, that's fine. But how about if we call you Lord Kaiser Hind? And he's like, what does that even mean? And then he goes home and he thinks, that sounds pretty good, actually. Yeah. But he doesn't know in the process, he's just lost all his kingdom.
Yeah.
But he now calls himself the Kaiser Hind and his wife is really impressed.
Maybe that's the thing that we are with. Like, obviously, I look back at sort of like pictures of British colonialism and it looks patently ridiculous, like most of history does. But at the time, we just had the best optics.
Yeah. Very little violence. Because I think most of the locals were trying to figure out what was going on. Like, why is there a man in the middle of, you know, this entire cowshed on a horse, you know, dressed like, you know, he's in the 12th century.
It still baffles me how we ended up, and I'm sure we will talk about this in more detail, how we ended up with the world's biggest empire where no British person is incapable of walking past another British person in the street without doing the sideways dance of apology.
Yeah.
And then...
Sorry. Yeah. That one,
yeah. And that's just
That's how you got in. All yeah. these countries, like, excuse us, we're just passing to you. Excuse me. Quick, mine everything!
Yeah. And then the emperor's like, wasn't that the guy apologizing 2 minutes ago?
Don't mind me.
Wasn't he sheepish? And nebulous.
The sheepish empire, definitely.
Yeah. Excuse me, sorry.
Book, it's a history book waiting to happen.
Yeah, but that topic obsesses me, you know, like... At the height of the empire, I don't know how many things I've written about this. At the height of the empire, there were only 20,000 British people governing 400 million people. And there was not a rebellion in 100 years. It's just a miracle of governance.
Yeah.
How did they do it? Because it seems, the little I read now, that the present government just governing this isle is a little incompetent.
Mm-hmm.
It's just tiny bit incapable of doing their job.
Yep.
How did they govern an entire country that didn't even know where it ended?
I've just done the maths on that, by the way. 20,000 people governing 400 million is one governor for every 20,000 people. And our last episode, we talked about how many vending machines there are in Japan, and there's one for every 27 people.
Maybe that's the model they used when the India office sent people over.
Yeah, the vending machines.
They were like, we were studying Tokyo. Now go run Darjeeling. Half the job of the important British magistrates was to measure where a king's kingdom ended. Most of the time, the king couldn't be bothered.
Yeah.
So the British said, if you paid us, and later they, of course, took over the kingdom. But initially...
We need to know what we're invading.
Yeah. They were like, do you know you have a sea on the other side? He said, I have a sea? How far did you go? He said, I went all the way to the east. No one's ever been there. I thought my kingdom ended at that tennis court. I said, no, you need to go further. I mean, so I don't know if it was the worst king empire, but it was definitely up there. The thing that I wrote down in terms of the worst empire are people who miss the empire. And I've been looking at a few people. I was in Singapore for a gig.
Uh-huh.
And I met an Indian gentleman who runs a British restaurant. Right? And he has Union Jacks outside the restaurant.
Yes.
He has photographs with Prince Charles or whatever when he visited Singapore. And he's been writing letters to the Premier of Singapore requesting that his restaurant be allowed to secede from the union.
Oh, yes, please.
And I'm sure there's somebody like that in Brazil who wants to belong to Portugal.
Yeah.
There's someone in China who wants to belong to Imperial Japan. And I think...
Someone in Bohemia who wants the Holy Roman Empire back.
Yeah. There's someone in London missing Londonium under Gaius Caesar.
Yeah.
And I think those guys are the worst empire because it's just a person.
Isn't that how the Vatican City started?
Yeah, just
the Pope's going like, no, I don't want to be part of Italy still.
Yeah, this is my bit of land.
Yeah. I think the whole world is going that way, you know, with high-rise apartment buildings. People just don't want to belong to countries. They just want to belong. They want their own little Vatican City. As long as you have your own flag. This is what the British taught us. Have your own flag.
Yeah.
Have nice clothes and build a wall. There's one battle in particular that I found really interesting. It was the very first time the British showed up in India. Mm. It was called the Battle of Plassey. And Lord Clive was actually was not part of the crown. He was an employee of the British East India Company.
Mm.
So, and he was a sales rep.
Yeah.
So he'd be the because his job was to pay money and buy tea and spices and ship it back to England. He was not in any way competent to have ships and soldiers. And I was obsessed with Clive because everywhere you see Clive is founder of the empire. Clive. Mm-hmm. Clive conquered India, etc.
This is very bizarre because my dad's called Clive, but on you go.
And, you know, I want to have a word with him because, because he could have gone to any other country. That would be really odd. Hello, sir. Ben gave me your number.
Yeah. I have a number of issues to take up with you going back 400 years.
Starting with 1757.
Yeah. What a great campaign. Like, it's a Dave Gorman show, that, where you ring every Clive in the phone and go, do you think, what about thinking about changing your name? Because, you know, it's got serious imperialist overtones. You could call yourself Clyde instead. Why not
a river?
Yeah, pronounce it Cleve.
The weirdest thing about you're right about the East India Company, right? Like, no, there's no other imperialism that I know of that started off as a business proposition.
Starbucks.
So imagine, so that's exactly what the British Empire in India was. Imagine if Starbucks went to war against Britain or China. I mean, they are, but
they have a very alert army. Starbucks.
Correct. And so Clive had no idea how to raise an army. So what started it? So he wasn't getting the price he wanted for whatever he was selling. So he said, right, this place looks fairly incompetent. I'm going to raise an army just to get the right price. So the local Maharaja is going to get terrified and he's going to pay me the right price for whatever I'm selling. That's how it started. So he got a bunch of mercenaries and advisors and so on and put together a ragtag group of 5,000 lunatic murderers. And Plassey is a place near Calcutta, and he had no plans for a war. There was no plans for a battle. He just thought he was going to scare the Maharaja, and that was it. And the Maharaja had 100,000 men. So Clive knew that, you know, he'd last 2 minutes. He'd be dead, and just that was that. Except, night before the battle, the Maharaja's first in charge, Muzaffar, comes to Clive and says, you know, if you give me a bribe, I can make sure the army doesn't fight. And the Maharaja is pretty incompetent. He's a bit of an idiot. By evening, I can guarantee Bengal belongs to you. And so Clive went, I was just here for some tea and spices, man. But, let me think about this.
You know what it's like when you nip down the shop on a Sunday morning to get, you know, a slice of bread, bottle of milk, then you come back and you own Spa.
You're the major shareholder. In a multinational corner shop.
Unexpected shareholding certificate in the bagging area.
Are you suggesting that the way the Empire played out was like the plot of With Nail and I, that we've gone on an imperial jaunt by mistake?
Correct. Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah. And Clive had no idea. In fact, if you read the letters of Clive, he says, this is not what I wanted. It's written to the crown, but now we've got India. What do you want me to do with it? And the crown writes back, what do you mean you have India? You're a sales rep. Who's your boss?
It's a farce.
How dare you write to me? You know, I'm like an imperial minister.
It's King Ralph.
It's that level of competence. And they didn't realize what they were doing. It's slowly, there was no resistance.
Wow.
It's like, you know, if I come to a place to do a podcast.
Yeah.
And someone says to me, oh, by the way, would you like my house?
There's the outro spoiled. It was going to be a surprise.
Damn it, I knew something was going up. They turned around, you're like, how was the podcast? You remember my wife asked me, it was good. And I have a 3-bedroom flat now. And so the lots of letters going back and forth with the East India Company's board of directors who were like, listen, there's no shipment this month. Why? Because the shipment is the whole country. What are we going to do now?
We need a bigger boat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He said, well, can we get more soldiers? So that's how it just began accidentally. And I think for the longest time, till now, till the last 70 years, fundamentally, there was the idea of India that it wasn't a single country. It was just loads of kings and provinces fighting and bribing each other. It was a bit like Milan fighting Naples and a bit like that, right? It was
Republic of Venice and all those. Yeah.
Venice and dukes and Genova, all like things and so. So if someone showed up who looked foreign and interesting and rich and said, just surrender, like, yeah, that's fine. But then the imperial guy had no idea.
It's like, the British coming in and going, break it up, break it up, break it up. Yeah. All of you go to your rooms. Yeah. We're in charge.
And they're like, okay. But that guy didn't really mean it. Yeah. No, he didn't want Bengal. He just wanted, like, I don't know, another £1,000 for whatever.
Yeah, some turmeric.
Yeah. He wanted cinnamon and he wanted to be out of there.
The way this is playing out, this sounds like your Chinese emperor, but blown up.
Yeah.
Like we're going to have to write a book called The Accidental Imperialists.
Yeah.
That's what British are.
Yeah. There was no, you know, I read about other empires, French and Belgians, you know, going into North Africa with proper armies and sword fighting. And all. I mean, Lord Wellesley wrote a note to London saying, if we wanted to march to Delhi tomorrow, we could do that and there'd be no opposition. And so London wrote back to him saying, what do you mean? What about people along the way? With swords and homes and stuff. He said, they will get out of the way. They won't bother. These are really nice people.
Oh, so you mean in the Indians, Britain found the nation that when they came to face each other on the pavement, they would step out of the way immediately. Like, they didn't have to do the side-to-side dance.
No, they everyone loved each other. They said, oh, you have the class system, we have the caste system. Yeah, good. you know, because I think for thousands of years, because the Mughals came before and the Turks came before that, India's had so many invaders.
Yeah.
If anyone wants to stay, I think most people are like, oh, what, will you, like, rebuild the municipal sewage? Yeah. And instead you just want a flag and just, go ahead, no problem.
But it's like Monty Python and the Life of Brian, I guess. Like, what did they ever do for us? Well,
the sewage and the road. I think till Mahatma Gandhi showed up and said, well, this is a country. Yeah. You know, for the longest time, we're like, oh, yeah. That's true.
But one of my mates was...
Everything was fine until Gandhi came along.
He was like, this is a country, how can there be other people?
I'll level with you, I thought we were going to have to work harder to get an Indian man to say that sentence. Yes.
One of my favourite Bollywood movies is about the Emperor Akbar. They made a movie about him. He was singing and dancing, which was great in itself. any emperor that dances.
To the people of our generation, we're just immediately imagining Admiral Akbar dancing.
And that's the thing, there was no Indian Admiral Akbar who said, it's a trap. There would have been no empire.
You just need that forewarning. And there's a great line in that movie where he decides one day to come down and meet the locals. And he dresses as a peasant woman, and he's emperor. As a peasant woman.
Okay, fine.
Cross-dressing, alive and well in 1512.
Great.
He comes down, he speaks to the people, he says, what do you think of Akbar? And one of the, like a fruit seller tells him, oh, we have no idea who's up in the fort. It's the British 1 week, it's Tajiks, it's Uzbeks. What does that have to do with my grapefruits? And that to me was a summary of Indian history. You know, someone up in Red Fort, old fort, running the place. It has nothing to do with my day-to-day stuff. So, you know, it was the Mughals, that's fine. It was the British, that's fine. What does the British, now what do they want? Oh, English. Oh, fine, I'll learn English. It's that. It's
plus the English for grapefruit. it's easy enough to pronounce, that's fine.
Exactly. He's like, if I spoke this language, would they buy my grapefruit?
Yeah, okay.
That's beautiful.
Till all of that fun ended. Till Gandhi said, no. Hello, this is a country. Arabian Sea, Bengal, up north, this is a country. And everyone's like, quiet, Dumbi, that's a bloody good idea. But for 1,000 years, no one told us that.
I took this opportunity to go onto one of my favourite Wikipedia pages, which is the list of micronations.
Yeah.
Micronations are almost always fictional. They're the sort of place that makes San Marino and Liechtenstein look like the British Empire.
Yeah.
The first one I looked at is something called the Arakan Empire.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the Arakan Empire was founded in May 1987. And the New York Times, 13 years later, described it as one of the more imaginative micronation states. It was founded by a Canadian guy called Eric Liss and a group of friends of his. Its members claim sovereignty over a square kilometre of land in Australia, a house-sized area of Montreal, Quebec, which contains the embassy to everything else, several other areas of Earth, a colony of Mars, the northern hemisphere of Pluto, and a planet that they have made up.
It counts, you know. This is the thing about an empire. As long as the rules are clear. Yeah. They have to follow some logical progression.
Yeah, they haven't gone, oh, we're going to own all of Pluto.
Yeah.
We'll own a hemisphere.
Correct.
You know, you've got to have realistic goals.
It's got a charter, and in it, it says these are the things.
So hang on, it's in Montreal, it's in Australia.
Yeah.
It's on Pluto.
Yeah.
Ryanair will have a field day trying to decide where they're going to land their planes.
Yeah.
Getting a flight to the Eirikan Empire. Well, we've landed you on Venus.
Yeah. This also sounds like 15 guys that got together and said, wouldn't it be nice to have an empire?
Yeah.
And so I was like, where do you live? He said, I'm in Montreal.
Yeah. I've got an acre of land in Australia. Yeah,
I think all of, you know, those things you can sign up to where you can own a little bit of the moon and a little bit of Mars and a little bit of the city of Atlantis.
Yeah.
They bought up every single one of those and turned it into an empire. It's got a mission statement. The mission statement of the empire is that it exists to facilitate the evolution of a society wherein the empire itself is no longer necessary. So its mission statement appears to have been written by Lewis Carroll.
Yeah, so they've established an empire to make empires unnecessary.
Yes.
Self-destructive, it's good. It's
I have seen their currency. It's got the smiley face on a lot
of
it.
Yes, it does.
And it had coins that had 42 on it. So they're clearly like sci-fi nerds. And pie on them. So they're all like sci-fi.
Yep.
Douglas Adams
and the point is, among those 20 people, if you could pay for that and say, you know, go and watch Lord of the Rings or whatever, then it's a medium of exchange.
Yeah.
For those 14 people, I mean, it's as good as anything. It's as good as the Indian
Empire.
It's
more organised than Clive showing up to buy some cumin.
Yeah.
And
he had no idea
how
that was going to go. Yeah. Right? He's just come to buy condiments.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, but instead of Clive had turned up and gone, what, so I've just read Tristram Shandy, and this is now going to form the basis of our constitution.
Which, if you've read the Indian Constitution, not too far.
Just empty pages and it begins with chapter 6 for no good reason.
People think this is unfilmable.
Yeah. By halfway through the Indian Constitution, India hasn't even been born yet.
There's a man writing the Tristopedia.
That joke's got to please about 5 English graduates.
Obviously, every good empire needs to have sort of national holidays. Mm. Theirs include the Dog Biscuit Appreciation Day Scavenger Hunt, 2nd of January, which is International Procrastinators Day. The 27th of...
Is it the 2nd of January?
Yes.
It was meant to be the 29th of December.
Yeah. The 27th of February, which is International Oops Day. And they also worship the Great Penguin, which it says here, this was originally intended as a joke, but now has up to 30 practitioners worldwide who take it seriously. Their national anthem is Home is Where I Hang My Towel. So another
Douglas Adams.
That they had a vote over what was going to be the national anthem, and it went for that. The second place was the Eirikan Nation to the tune of My Generation by The Who.
Talking about the Eirikan Nation.
Exactly. Nice. But the Eirikan Nation is altogether too wholesome and too lovely to be the world's worst empire. So I...
The only time they've ever been in battle is during D&D.
Yeah.
In fact, any empire that has an International Procrastinator's Day needs all writers and comedians to join.
Yeah.
This is a great empire.
Do they have a website?
Yes, they do have a website.
Excellent. We will be signing up.
It is a website that looks like it was last hosted on GeoCities in 1998, which sort of fits with the whole procrastinators thing.
Exactly, yeah.
But I found a couple of things a lot more sinister. The first one is the Dominion of Melchizedek. And this is a unilaterally declared, internationally unrecognised micronation that was formed in the 1990s by an American citizen called Mark Pedley, possibly with his father David. It basically facilitated large-scale banking fraud. When it first was created, it also laid claim to a number of lands, like the Aryan Empire, including the Colombian island of Malpelo, Caratane Shoal in the South Pacific, which is completely submerged for most of the day, the Clipperton Island, which is an overseas possession of France, which lies 1,500 miles west of Nicaragua.
Yes, possession of France. Yep. Where did I leave the Clipperton Islands?
That's the embarrassing thing about decolonialisation. They were just bits of empires that all of European nations just went, oh, I forgot we owned that.
Yes. What are you missing? A baguette and some islands. Yeah. Two things.
I remember I had it in Nicaragua.
They also own bits of Micronesia and parts of the Marshall Islands.
On what basis did he own these?
Bribes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they were banned from entering the island of Rotuma after their involvement with dissident groups who tried to secede from Fiji. I mean, in my mind, Fiji is quite a happy-go-lucky sort of place.
Yeah.
But apparently it had a secessionist movement that was stoked by these guys.
I mean, they're just like people with a lot of money, and you said banking fraud, so they were just sinking their money into buying up bits of land in other countries.
Yes. Yeah, they even, and I've never heard of a tax haven do this before, and bear in mind, my wife is a tax lawyer, they even claimed that part of Antarctica belonged to them.
And the great penguin went, nope, I'm with the Americans.
It's been described as a non-existent country by the US Securities, or non-existent empire by the US Securities and Exchange Commission. According to the Washington Post, in 1993, the Dominion of Melchizedek was diplomatically recognised by the Central African Republic.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. The Post then went on to remark, you get the feeling that the Central African Republic would recognise the state of denial if it had a letterhead.
That's probably does.
That's pretty strong.
So basically, as you guys recognised, it was set up as a fraud to basically have various shell banks connected with it. I did a bit more reading on this guy, David Pedley, who was behind it. And he'd already been stuck in jail during the 70s for various financial crimes. His dad died in jail because he'd been involved in fraud as well. And it was sort of like the last throw of the dice for him.
My dad's died, the feds are on my tail, what do I do? I found an empire! Yeah.
This is the time.
We've all been there.
But I'm torn between that and the Romanov Empire.
Oh, yeah.
But not that one.
Oh.
Last year, the Russian businessman and politician Anton Bakov proposed to recreate the Russian monarchy and said it would be led by Prince Karl Emick of Leningen, and he would be known as Emperor Nicholas III. And he has a direct line to the Romanovs who were killed by the communists.
There's a few of them around, so isn't there?
Yeah. Last year, talks were involved with the heads of several countries to purchase a territory to establish as this sort of micro-state. They include Montenegro, Macedonia, Albania, the Gambia, Antigua and Barbuda, and once again, Kiribati.
Yeah, we're the heirs to the Russian Empire. Where do we fancy going on holiday?
Yeah.
Yeah. Can we buy Kiribati?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, Kiribati. That's how it's pronounced. He actually started this idea about 6 years ago, and before he got involved with any of these places, he claimed territories including the entire continent of Antarctica.
Yeah.
So he looked at the Dominion of Melchizedek and went, I'll see you when I'll raise you, lads. And various lands under the jurisdiction of Japan, the United Kingdom, and the United States, which is... That's a baller move to look at some of the biggest imperial nations on Earth and go, actually, you belong to us now.
Yeah. So this is oddly sounding a little like a more sophisticated tax haven.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it is true that the Russian Sovereign Wealth Fund has a lot more money.
Yeah.
And they could probably make a successful bid for the United States and every other country that wanted to buy it. Now
Trump's a deal maker. He's open to offers.
Yeah.
In 2014, Anton Bakov announced that he'd purchased 96 hectares of land in Montenegro to build an imperial palace with a Russian cultural centre and Orthodox monastery. 2015, they were in talks with Macedonia and Albania about collaborating with future state recognition. And they even talked to President of Gambia during the 70th UN General Assembly session. And I imagine the President of Gambia was thinking, am I part of a hidden camera show here? I think, as tempted as I am to go with these guys, I'm going to go with the Dominion of Melchizedek because they're just so... They're right on the sweet spot between genuine micronation and batshit crazy cult.
Yeah. Great, yeah. And lots of money laundering. Which always said, I think it would be nice if the Romanovs could be like, I don't know about you guys, but I miss the monarchy. I mean, you guys still have it. It's ceremonial. It's lovely.
Irish tea.
Yeah, you guys never liked it.
Not massive fans.
But you know, look at the real estate they leave behind.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, what would you visit in India without the palaces, you know?
Yeah.
You'd just like, oh, it'd just be the Slumdog Millionaire set. You know? Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, yeah. But you go see Taj Mahal, you go see this, because there's a lot you can do without rule of law, unlimited resources, some general narcotics, and the will of a madman.
There are no tourists going on holiday to ancient Senate buildings, are there?
No, exactly. Medieval India, Emperor Akbar did not like a capital. He was bored with it. Moved the entire capital to another town. Made 1 million people walk. 200,000 people died along the way. They reached that capital, Fatehpur Sikri, realized they have no water, so they all moved back. Another 200,000 people died along the way.
We shouldn't laugh at 200,000 people died, but this is bonkers.
This is perfect, because this is what you can do with the monarchy, right? The Mongolian emperor Hulagu, right, when he ran out of sport, decided that they wanted to play polo with the heads of camels.
Yep.
Yeah, and if you did not participate in the sport because you didn't like violence, you were killed. Now, that's how you build a fan base. That's how you build a fan base.
Our choices for the world's worst empire are Barry's of the Great Manchurian Empire, overseen by the over-eager Puyi. Anuvab's suggestion of the British Empire.
Clive of India, sales rep.
There you go. Or my suggestion.
Hello, I'm Clive. Welcome to India. Can I get you some cumin?
Yeah. We have a 2-for-1 offer. Yeah. We're throwing in Bhutan today.
It's part of the Black Friday sale.
Yeah.
Or my suggestion of the Dominion of Melchizedek. Not from the Bible, but from 1990s fraudsters. Oh, this is difficult decisions. I mean, it's hard to sit in front of an Indian and an Irishman and not say the British Empire.
I know. Yeah, the looks Ben is getting at the moment are very... But very tense.
Enough time has passed. I think Melchizedek seems like it deserves... Also because there's unaccounted for money, which makes it sexier.
It does, but in terms of the...
Point of order, is it a dominion or an empire?
Great question.
It is a dominion, but I think that's sort of interchangeable.
What's it a dominion of?
The amount of money that Melchizedek conned, we're talking like a few million. It's nothing compared to the amount of money that the British Empire managed to steal from other countries.
True.
But if you two want to pick it as the world's worst empire...
You're the one making this decision, Ben, and don't you dare try and wash your hands on in the blood of our ancestors.
All I'll say, and I think we've talked about it before, there was an operation in the 1960s or 70s where basically the Foreign Office and the Commonwealth Office took all of the official documentation about the British Empire and chucked it in the sea.
That's true.
Can't remember what it's called, but what I'm saying is... there's no evidence anymore that we did anything bad.
Yeah. You're right. What if I learnt English from Facebook? What if I...
So with your blessings, yes. I'm going to claim that the Dominion of Melchizedek is the world's worst empire.
Very good.
It wins.
It does. Before we...
What are they paying you? What are they paying you?
We'll never know because it's in the Cayman Islands. Or Antarctica.
Before we go, the world's worst news of the week. We go to Japan, where a gentleman called Akihiko Kondo has spent $18,000 to marry a hologram.
Oh, no.
Yeah, those wacky Japanese are at it again.
Oh, no.
Big points to the copy editor of this article, because its sub-headline is "Till Tech Do Us Part."
Hey.
But he says he never has to worry about his virtual wife cheating or dying on him. He's 35 years old, and he has got hitched to Hatsune Miku, who is a singing hologram who uses a voice synthesizer to perform at sold-out shows worldwide. So clearly, he's a gold digger as well as a maniac.
Hang on, he said, oh, she's never going to die on him.
Mm-hmm. What if the batteries run out?
What, direct sunlight?
So he married this hologram.
Hang on, she's a singer. Hang on, I nearly missed that bit as well.
Yeah, she's a singing hologram.
Wow.
So she could be doing like Madison Square Garden.
Yeah, yeah.
But
and he's just on tour with her.
Yeah.
Enjoying the high life.
And it's really nice of him that if he's marrying a hologram, he could have picked anybody. He could have picked Madonna.
Yeah.
He could have picked Dua Lipa. He could have... Because he's marrying a hologram. It doesn't matter. It's good that he picked an unknown artist.
Yeah.
So it's love. So he knew her from the days when she was no one.
Yeah. When she was but a glint in the engineer's eye.
Exactly.
However...
Oh, no.
So...
He's tried to have sex with her and jammed up the device.
No, that's not occurred. What I can tell you is that while he is monogamous... She is not. So Gatebox, the company that have created Miku, has already issued more than 3,700 marriage certificates to people who want to wed the hologram. So actually, she is a deeply polyamorous hologram.
Wow, it's imagine the viruses he's going to pick up from her.
Yeah. Well, I presume that as part of the wedding ceremony, he had to install McAfee.
Yeah.
That's as good as any ritual.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
She's a pop star. Right?
Yeah.
So she gets around, you know? It's only fair. He could have married, you know, someone who works in Japanese accountancy and is a hologram, but he chose a public figure. And that comes with consequences.
imagine, wonder if they have a list. You know the way couples have a list where people are allowed to sleep in, like, he's like, oh, I can sleep with Katy Perry or Eva Mendes or whatever. And she's like, I can sleep with Mavis Beacon, Windows 95, and a paperclip from Microsoft Word.
So I need to put out, like, the hologram, she's not a hologram of a real pop star. She's like an
invented
hologram. Yeah,
it's like, but she's still humanoid, right?
Yeah. But he is essentially married Minnie Mouse.
Yeah.
But does the hologram look like her? Is it modelled on like a regular Japanese woman who works in insurance or something? That woman would be pissed.
Yeah. Wait, I've married 3,700 people.
Yeah. But we're not too far away from a world where you can send a hologram to somewhere where you do not want to be. You know, like, say my in-laws are having a party.
Yeah.
And they want me to talk about whatever, their friends, and
I'm going to send the wife. Yeah,
and there's a hologram there. And he's much more articulate than I am while I'm at home watching Netflix.
Yeah, I think actually this guy's clearly a trailblazer. We're not giving him the credit he deserves.
He's ahead of time. Yeah,
totally is. Beautiful. Before we go, Anubhav, where can our listeners find you and what can they find you doing when they get there?
The next thing I'm doing is this BBC World Service thing, which comes out on BBC World Service.
Right.
End of the year. It's the New Year's Eve show and they have picked 5 countries from the world, and 5 comedians from those countries are visiting this country and recording for the BBC, and it comes out New Year's Eve on BBC World Service Radio.
Excellent.
So that's what I'm doing next.
Excellent.
In person, and then my hologram is touring
across the
northern
Desert.
India as I'm on this podcast. Yeah.
That's remarkably efficient. Well done.
Yeah.
Beautiful stuff. Well, we're all off to form the Dominion of Vandermeerstay and embezzle some money from a variety of our citizens. Until next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
That was Anubhav, and what an absolute pleasure it was to record with him. He's such a nice man and such a funny man. And this episode, which is, what, about an hour long, is maybe half of what we recorded in full. The three history nerds got around the microphone and just wouldn't shut the hell up. So there's a lot of extra content from that might find its way onto our Patreon page at some point, and indeed into any future Offcuts episodes. Do go watch Anubhav or listen to him or check out any of his previous work, because he's a wonderful guy, and we had an absolute ball recording with him. This was episode 99 of Worst Foot Forward. That's a little outrageous. Ben and I are a little bemused as to how we've gotten this far and where exactly 2 years of our lives have gone. So that means that next week will be our 100th episode, and Ben and I are doing a special episode, just the two of us, talking about the world's worst 100 and all of that's many
incarnations, so tune in for that. Thank you to everyone who has coped with our migration from SoundCloud to Libsyn. Hopefully it hasn't affected any of you in any real way. And as ever, do the usual. Find us online at WorstFoot on Twitter. I'm on at BazMaxDay. Ben is on at Ben Vandeveld. We're also on Facebook, if you look up WorstFoot Forward. And you can find our website, WorstFootForwardPodcast.com, with all of our previous episodes and some extra bits and pieces there. And a link to our Patreon page. Let's give it a shout out. It's been a while. If you want to continue supporting us, obviously keep listening to the show, but if you feel like you would like to contribute to the further and future endeavours of the show, then go to patreon.com/WorstFootForward and look up ways you can help us out with a little bit of cash in exchange for extra bonus content and other such delightful things. Oh, and one last thing. You may have seen us tweet this week about the fact that I have a play that's going to be on in London next year, a play that I've written, called Vespertilio, which will be running at the Vault Festival in London, in Waterloo, from the 20th to the 24th of February. We'll intermittently tweet about it, but if you are interested in coming to see something that I've written, a new play about love, lies, loneliness, and bats, based on a really interesting article I read in The Guardian, then go on my Twitter feed, at BazMaxDay, as I mentioned, and we will again poke you about coming to see it in the coming months. That's it. That's enough. You've already listened to a long enough episode, and tune in next week for our 100th. Please listen with your party hats and party poppers, and maybe this week send us your thoughts on what you'd like to happen for the next 100 episodes. Thanks very much for listening. Bye.
Worst Foot Forward is part of Podnose, the UK's leading independent entertainment podcasting network. For episode archives of Worst Foot Forward and all of the shows on the network, visit us at www.podnose.com. You can also follow us on Twitter via @Podnose or send us an email via admin@podnose.com.